Montanans are forced to change a lot of plans as a full-blown blizzard grips much of the state. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and the impacts of that blizzard top our news tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us why the ACLU may sue the state over its treatment of mentally ill inmates. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks war and peace with one of the world's foremost philosophers. Before we get to our blizzard information, we have this breaking news. A snowslide in the lower Rattlesnake area of Missoula has destroyed a house on Holly Street, trapping a young child inside. Rescuers are on scene at this hour trying to get to the trapped child. Traffic is being diverted away from North Van Buren Street, so please avoid this area if you can. Resident Dave Burkoff was driving by the scene when the avalanche happened, and he spoke a few minutes ago with news director Sally Mock.
Dave, I understand that you were driving by the area when the avalanche happened. Tell me what you saw.
Yeah, I was driving up Van Buren, and as we came to Holly Street, I thought a plow was going down Holly really fast and wasn't stopping, and it was just a big fall of snow and a huge rumbling sound, and it hit the passenger side of our car. It took the mirror off. I thought it was going to knock us over. We drove through it, I asked my son what that was, and he said it was an avalanche. And so we turned around in the middle of the road, came back. There was debris everywhere, trees in the road. We had just missed being really hit hard. And there was a woman in the front yard of her house screaming, my son, and about 5 to 10 people came running out. I had my son grab the shovels. We had just gone backcountry skiing, so we had shovels and probes, and just ran up and tried to help, and there's an incredible amount of damage.
And Dave, right now, can you tell me what the status of the search is for the child?
There's two garages that have been slammed up against the back of the house, and that's the area where we're searching. We're hoping we're hoping he has an area, maybe an air pocket. So that's really the hope.
Well, we'll let you get back to the search, Dave, and thank you so much for talking to us about what happened, and I'm glad you're all right.
Well, thanks. We're really hoping for the kid.
As we all are. Thank you so much.
We just got word that a victim of the avalanche has been loaded into an ambulance. We do not know their condition. We hope to have more details before the end of our newscast.
The University of Montana, all Missoula County public schools, and many other Western Montana schools and businesses were closed today because of the weather, and it's going to get worse. The forecast includes a blizzard warning stretching from Glacier National Park to south of Hamilton. Some sections of Montana highways were closed today as well, while a warning is in effect for north central Montana for wind chill temperatures falling as low as 60 below zero at times between tonight and Sunday morning. The National Weather Service says blizzard conditions in western Montana will continue through tomorrow. Meteorologist Corby Dickerson says conditions will in fact worsen tonight.
Another even stronger blast of Arctic air is going to surge across the Continental Divide tonight, resulting in even stronger winds than what we've already experienced today. We've received additional snowfall today, as everybody out there has seen, and the addition of stronger winds is just going to make conditions even worse than what people have already seen.
Dickerson says wind gusts could reach 50 miles an hour, dropping wind chills to 30 below zero. We'll get a brief break before another system moves in Sunday night and Monday. That could possibly dump another 6 inches of snow in the Missoula Valley. The Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for southwestern, central, and south central Montana with up to a foot of snow forecast in some areas. Chris Lounsbury manages Missoula County's Office of Emergency Management. He says many people heeded the warnings and stayed home today.
Folks have been doing a great job of staying off the roadways unless they've had a real need to be out. We've seen about 40 accidents over Missoula County since last night, which is a little higher than our normal, but not much above what we would normally see during a snowstorm. Have seen a few folks, of course, having difficulty traversing the roads with a few more vehicles stuck and those kinds of things, but it seems for the most part folks are taking our advice, which we greatly appreciate, and minimizing their travel where they can.
Snowplow crews are working around the clock, and the Mountain Line bus service is offering free rides today through tomorrow. Many businesses and county offices closed early today. Most private and public schools in western Montana were closed, and Missoula County Public Schools postponed all school and sports activities scheduled for today and Saturday, while high school basketball games between schools in Billings and Great Falls also were postponed. Those games are to be rescheduled. The University of Montana was also closed today, and all Friday events, with the exception of tonight's Harlem Globetrotters game, were canceled. Spokeswoman Peggy Coor says blowing snow was just too much to keep up with.
And the difficulty that UM crews were having keeping any of the walkways or any of the roads open on campus. So that really helped, I think, the president decide after consulting with some of those essential services people that we needed to close not only the Mountain campus down, but also Missoula College and Bitterett College.
Coor says it's a rare event to shut the campus down.
We did close for several days after Mount St. Helens erupted in May of 1980. So that was several days of closure. There was a blizzard closure at some point in the 1980s, they recall, and a half-day closure because of a blizzard in the 1990s.
While it's a terrible day to be going anywhere by car, Missoula Airport Deputy Director Brian Ellisted says the storm has not yet caused any serious problems with air travel.
We have a fresh set of crews coming in here. I mean, our equipment's running nonstop. It's nonstop, continuous cleaning the surfaces, but to keep rotating fresh crews in, so we're hoping to be able to keep up with it.
There were also several closures and cancellations in the Flathead and Mission Valleys. Reporter Ketchum Fry has the update.
Winds gusting up to 35 miles per hour made the Whitefish Mountain Resort close Chair 1 today, the chair that takes skiers to the summit of the mountain. The rest of the hill was open, but they did shut down night skiing for tonight. The north end of Flathead Valley was seeing the rougher conditions, with Columbia Falls, the only school district in the Flathead, to close due to weather. Glacier National Park also shut its administrative offices for the day. High school basketball players planning to be in Kalispell tonight for the Northwestern A Divisional Basketball Tournament are not heading this way, as that's been delayed until Saturday. In Polson, at the southern end of Flathead Lake, the school district closed early and canceled after-school activities. Across the Mission Valley, the weather caused the Salish and Kootenai Community College to close for the day. Many of the tribal government offices work Monday through Thursday, but those generally open on Friday were also shut today. Speaking to one woman in St. Ignatius, she described the snow as muck boot deep, saying she's been shoveling off and on all day, a situation it sounds like many are familiar with in this storm system. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Once again, blizzard and winter storm warnings remain in effect for much of western Montana tonight through tomorrow morning. We'll have the specific forecast later on in this broadcast.
And in other news from around the state, attorneys for a former Montana teacher who raped a 14-year-old student say his 30 days in prison were enough, despite claims that a judge had ordered an overly lenient sentence. Prosecutors contend freed rapist Stacey Dean Rambold of Billings should have served a minimum of 4 years after pleading guilty. They want to send him back to prison. His attorneys filed papers today with the state Supreme Court arguing the original sentence was appropriate. They say the state missed its chance to appeal by not raising the issue during an August sentencing hearing. Montana's Judicial Standards Commission says the judge in the case, G. Todd Baugh of Billings, should be censured for imposing an unlawful sentence and blaming the child victim.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Montana is alleging widespread mistreatment of mental illness at both the Montana State Prison and State Hospital. The ACLU, on behalf of the organization Disability Rights Montana, is threatening to sue the state after finding what it calls pervasive constitutional violations towards mentally ill inmates. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us the claims come after a more than 1 year investigation.
Even though someone has committed crimes and they are incarcerated, they are entitled under the Constitution to receive mental and medical care that reaches a certain threshold.
That's Bernadette Franks-Ongoy.
I'm the executive director of Disability Rights Montana.
She says for a while, her organization has been receiving letters from mentally ill inmates accusing the state prison of mistreatment.
They weren't getting the appropriate medication, that they were being put in solitary confinement.
So over 16 months, the organization investigated the prison, interviewing at least 50 inmates.
Reviewed thousands and thousands of documents.
And she says they found a lot of evidence to back up what the inmates had been telling them. Some put in solitary confinement for 22 or 24 hours a day for months at a time. Mental health staff withholding medication, refusing to diagnose inmates despite clear supporting evidence of mental issues. And space, She says the prison's mental health unit contains only 12 beds.
Right now, there are over 275 prisoners with a diagnosis of a mental illness that are on the psychiatrist's caseload.
Disability Rights Montana contracted with the ACLU to write a 22-page letter to the Department of Corrections and Department of Public Health and Human Services outlining their findings. It says the conduct at the prison magnifies the severity of mental illnesses afflicting prisoners instead of reducing it. Frank Songoy says if the departments don't work to correct these practices, a lawsuit will be coming.
We take these allegations and accusations very seriously.
That's Leroy Kierkegaard. He's the warden at the Montana State Prison. A response to the ACLU letter from the Corrections Department says the department has been working for the past year to determine how to best provide mental health services. But Warden Kierkegaard says there's a lot which is misleading about the ACLU letter.
Some of the people they talk to, I can't sit here right now and tell you that they even have a mental illness.
He says the letter makes it seem like inmates are put in solitary confinement because of mental health issues. He says that's just not true.
They're a danger to themselves. They're a danger to other inmates. And it reaches a point to where we get them their medication. The mental health staff see them on a regular basis, and nothing seems to help.
Kierkegaard acknowledges the prison does have problems providing enough space for some mentally ill inmates, but he says the 12-bed mental health unit is intended for those who have severe mental health problems. Most of the inmates with diagnosed disorders don't fit that description.
They do fine and have done fine for years in general population.
Still, Kierkegaard says the department wants to work with the ACLU and Disability Rights Montana to try to resolve these concerns without going to court. Yet, both sides admit addressing some of these issues would be costly. Again, Disability Rights Montana Executive Director Bernadette Franks Ongoy.
Being able to attract appropriate and qualified staff has always been a problem.
She says the Montana State Prison System has a 75% turnover rate in its mental health staff per year. I'm Dan Boyce, reporting at the Capitol.
See the full letter from ACLU of Montana, as well as the response from Corrections Department Director Mike Batista on our website. That's mtpr.org.
And once again, as we reported earlier, a snowslide in the Lower Rattlesnake area of Missoula has damaged at least one house on Holly Street, trapping a young child inside. Rescuers worked frantically to free the child. Missoula Police Sergeant Travis Welsh says the child has been found alive and been transported away in an ambulance. He says a search is still underway for an elderly couple who may have been trapped as well. Traffic is being diverted away from North Van Buren Street, so please avoid this area if you can.
Tonight's talk in the President's Lecture Series at the University of Montana is one of many events canceled because of today's blizzard, but the featured speaker did brave the elements today to sit down in our studios with News Director Sally Mock. Avishai Margalit is an emeritus philosophy professor at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, an author, and one of the foremost living philosophers who has written extensively about the struggle between Islam and the West. In this feature interview, Margalit talks with his view that the lofty goal of peace with justice is not always attainable.
There is a mantra which talks about peace and justice in one swoop as if it's a Nescafe with milk, name of fish and chips, that the two things go together almost. I mean, you have to, in one swoop. And my claim is that there is a tension between peace and justice, because in many cases, peace is an outcome of a compromise which not necessarily reflects what is the just solution, yet for the sake of peace, it's a justified compromise. So peace, I mean, doesn't address the grievances even of those who believe that they were wrong, and sometimes justly believe that they were wrong. It reflects the relative power of the sides involved, and it reflects external constraints, economic constraints, big powers constraints, and other things. And therefore, Peace can be in serious tension with what is perceived, even by impartial observers, as a just solution.
Wouldn't one of the critiques of that be, though, that if you have peace without justice, it's all too fragile, a peace?
Peace can be fragile even if it's just. I mean, the issue of an unstable peace and a sense of being wronged by the peace and therefore seeking revenge, actually, which was felt by lots of German after the First World War. And they thought that they need a second round. And the French thought that they needed a second round after the 1870 war. So either claims of irredentism, claim for the old country's land that was taken from us, and other grievances usually may destabilize peace. And if you can have peace with justice, definitely that's the best thing, if both sides recognize it as peace and justice. The claim is about the second best. What is the second best for not having peace and justice? And the second best, to my mind, is having peace in most cases.
Because war is so devastating.
Yes, because of the violence that goes with war and the disruption of life. What I'm struggling with is the tension between ideals and second best. We think about ideals as summit of mountains. You climb to the mountain, and even if you can't get to the peak, at least the second best is as close to the peak as you can get. But in many cases, there is no continuity on the way up. And suddenly there is a canyon or something that stops your way, and you need an altogether different strategy.
So is there, in your view, any unacceptable peace?
Yes. I mean, namely, oppressive peace. I mean, there are very grossly unjust regimes that dictate by sheer force their will. And there are reasons to revolt against them. I don't accept any state of affairs. But if it's a reasonable compromise, but with no full justice, and the demands for peace are such that you give up on the claim for justice in the future. It's not a temporary now. Well, all right, let me gain what I can gain. But later on, I'll have a second round with you when I'm getting stronger. No, I mean, the part of this kind of peace, the second best peace, is sometimes really giving up on just claims.
You've written that there are compromises and rotten compromises, and you said, quote, rotten compromises are not allowed even for the sake of peace.
Yeah. Rotten compromises are really compromises based on establishing or maintaining inhuman relations and inhuman conditions, violating basic human rights, and for example, I took as an example the Munich Agreement with Nazi Germany, when it was clear what Nazi Germany is about and what they are going to establish.
A rotten compromise.
That's a rotten compromise. But there are compromises which are shabby, and which are dreary, which are not terribly appealing, but still acceptable compromises.
Let's put these theories into some context. Syria.
Yeah. Syria, what happens in Syria is that this is dismemberment of a nation state into its sectarian elements. Now, it's a civil war. And the general question And the context is the context of civil war and how to address civil wars. Most of the wars up to the Second World War were war between states or imperial powers. From the Second World War, the ratio now is 5-1 in favor of internal wars, civil wars. The main phenomenon now in the world is civil war. Whereas wars between states take on average 3 months, civil wars go for 6 years on average. 6 years on average. They are bitter, they are bloody, they are cruel, and sometimes it's just acting on the fantasies of what Freud called the narcissism of minor differences. And they are the bloodiest of the bloody, those wars. And how to handle it, it's very difficult. Now, addressing your question straight on. Should you strike a deal with Assad because he can maintain stability or not? Could you make a deal with the rebels? Now, the point is, Assad created a situation of by my definition, of an inhuman regime. There is no question. The trouble is that the opposition is constituted by two utterly different elements. And the main element is, in the vague sense, Al-Qaeda element. It's not exactly, but it's an Al-Qaeda-like sectarian Sunni militant that wants to install Sharia. And the places that they conquered, they behaved as badly, if not worse, than us. In such a cases, you don't know what to do. You have to intervene if you have on humanitarian grounds. For example, make the convoy with food and medicine go through, even come what may. This you should do. Provide people with shelter, provide them, in the winter there. But to intervene in the actual war as a war, as a sort of siding with one of the world, I think is a mistake.
Sometimes it seems, Dr. Margalit, that rotten compromises may be the only option.
I don't buy this argument of necessity. No, then there is no compromise. You carry on what you carry on. You just don't do such things. There are things that you just don't do. And if you do, you cannot be justified, you may be excused. In justified means that what you did or what you do is right. Although it may on the face of it not look that way, but justified means you try to justify by saying it was the right thing to do. Excuse, you say, no, it was wrong, but there was no alternative. And the alternative was as bad as this one. And I'm cursed if I do this, and I'm cursed if I don't do it. In that case, I can be excused. So the people who ate the flesh of a fellow body on the raft can be excused. They cannot be justified. So there are cases. You can always come up with a case that it's so horrific. At best, you can be excused. You cannot be justified.
It's been such a pleasure to have in our studio Avishai Margalit, one of the most prominent philosophers in the world today, and so appreciate him fighting through our stormy weather to be in our studio. I can't thank you enough, Dr. Margalit. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now for this weekend's forecast. West of the Divide, there is a blizzard warning in effect until 5 a.m. tomorrow for the West Glacier region and the Flathead and Mission Valleys, and until 11 a.m. tomorrow for the Missoula and Bitterroot Valleys and the Potomac-Sealy Lake region. There's also a winter storm warning in effect until 11 a.m. tomorrow for the Butte-Blackfoot region and a winter weather advisory in effect until 11 a.m. tomorrow for the Lower Clark Fork region, the Bitterroot and Sapphire Mountains, as well as the Kootenai Cabinet region. Tonight's snow is likely with areas of blowing snow, and lows should be 5 below to 12 below zero. Wind gusts could reach up to 55 miles per hour. Tomorrow, snow is likely with highs 6 to 13 degrees, and on Sunday, snow remains likely with highs in the teens. In central Montana, there's a wind chill warning in effect until noon Sunday for all of central Montana. There's a winter weather advisory in effect until 6 p.m. tomorrow for the Northern Rocky Mountain Front, Eastern Glacier County, Shoto, Eastern Pondere, Eastern Teton County, elevations below 5,000 feet for the Southern Rocky Mountain Front, Cascade, Judith Basin, and Fergus County. There's also a winter storm warning in effect until 6 p.m. tomorrow for the central and southern Lewis and Clark County, Marr, and for elevations above 5,000 feet for the Southern Rocky Mountain Front, Cascade, Judith Basin, and Fergus counties. Tonight expect snow with lows 20 below to 35 below zero. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow. Expect highs 10 below to 20 below zero. And on Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow. Highs will be 5 below to 5 above zero. And in southwest Montana, there's a winter storm warning in effect until 6 p.m. tomorrow for Madison, Jefferson, Broadwater, Gallatin, and Beaverhead counties. Tonight, look for snow with lows 15 below to 5 above zero. Tomorrow should be cloudy with snow, and the high should be 0 to 10 degrees above. And on Sunday, it'll be cloudy with a chance of snow and highs up into the 20s. And now for the editorial comments of Olivia Ryuta.
We are now just 1 month away from the March 31st deadline to enroll in the new health insurance marketplace. When you hear talk of health reform, or the ACA, or Obamacare, or whatever you prefer to call it, a lot of things probably come to mind. For me, as a navigator, whose job is to help folks in my community by answering questions and walking them through the process, I think about Bill, a man I met in southeastern Montana. A decade ago, Bill's family had to sell the ranch to survive, and he has worked part-time ever since. For years, he paid for health insurance until it just got too expensive at almost $400 a month, so he dropped it. Bill was not too sure about Obamacare in the marketplace, but we walked through the application, I answered his questions, and he was able to get good private insurance that covers everything from doctor's visits to prescription drugs to the emergency room, from the same company that insured him before, for just $50 a month. But Bill is certainly not alone. In the 5 months since open enrollment began, thousands of Montanans from across the state have signed up, and we are among the top states in terms of enrollment in the new insurance marketplace. But this shouldn't come as a surprise. We are a state that understands that when our neighbor can go to the doctor when they're sick, when our community has access to the health care they need, we are all better off. Access to quality and affordable insurance, it's a big deal. I have helped people who are getting an annual exam for the first time in a decade. They're taking care of a surgery that will allow them to work and support their family. And they're able to afford all of the prescription drugs that their doctor prescribes for the first time ever. So whether you're a bit hesitant like Bill or simply haven't found the time, with just a month left, you need to take the time to see what you might qualify for, to see if insurance might be an option. And if you're like the 85% of Montanans who have already enrolled, you will likely qualify for help paying for the cost of your coverage. But they are not all success stories. So many times I sit across from someone and tell them that because the Montana legislature chose not to expand Medicaid, they fall in the Medicaid coverage gap and are too poor to get any help. If it sounds crazy, you're right. The 2013 Montana legislature said no thanks to $6 billion, with a B, in federal funds, which would have helped bring 12,000 jobs to our state annually and covered 70,000 of our lowest income neighbors through Montana Medicaid. That's a lot of money and lost jobs to simply turn away. But even more so, 70,000 is a lot of families and individuals. To me, Montana's failure to expand Medicaid is Beth, a woman that I met on the High Line who had stopped chemo treatment because she didn't have insurance. Before we did her application, she was so excited about the possibility of having health insurance and being well again. With her silvery hair just beginning to grow back, Beth's smile seemed unstoppable. My heart broke when I told her that she didn't qualify for anything because she didn't make enough money. Beth doesn't make enough money to qualify for help because she can't work, and she can't work because she has cancer. Folks like Beth were supposed to be covered by Medicaid, but because our state legislature rejected the money and failed to expand, now they have no other option but to remain uninsured. So we have some work to do. We need to come together and expand Montana's Medicaid program. We need to make sure that the most vulnerable in our communities get access to health care. Whether Medicaid expansion goes to the ballot or we get it done in a special session, our families and communities can't wait. Because no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, no matter where you get your news, we can all agree that folks like Beth deserve better. Our neighbors deserve better, and we can do better. We can expand Medicaid in Montana. And in the next 4 weeks, please take the time and check out healthcare.gov. See what you qualify for and enroll by March 31st. And if you're like Bill or Beth and want to sit down with someone in your community to help answer your questions and walk you through the process, we are ready to help. On healthcare.gov, you can click on Find Local Help and get a list of folks in your area. I'm Olivia Riuta with the Montana Primary Care Association and a certified navigator. Thanks for listening and have a warm and safe weekend.
Olivia Riuta is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend and stay safe.